What should the relationship between Christians and Halloween be? We're going to discuss that on this episode of The Unapologetic Show, where we defend truth without compromise with Dr. Bobby Conway, the One Minute Apologist. I'm your host, Tim Hall. Bobby, before we get to Halloween, which is right on the doorstep here, let's talk a little bit about a trip that you just had where you got to go to Germany. So tell us a little bit about why you were in Germany and what kind of led up to you being in Germany and a little bit about what happened while you were in Germany.
Well, as you know, Tim, a family in our church, the Prinz, their daughter Mary got married and they invited us to come along, and they'd just been such great friends and supporters of our ministry at One Minute Apologists and at Image Church. And I thought, hey, this would be great. Let's just go hang out with them, bond, connect. And so we always love the opportunity to go to Germany. It's a wonderful land. And so we had a wonderful time with them.
Well, that's fantastic. So what are some of the things that you got to do while you were in Germany?
Well, we were in a place called Rüttlingen in southwest Germany, and close by, about 15 minutes away from there, was the University of Tübingen. And that is a very great school, and it produced some great luminaries, people like Johannes Kepler, you know, who is famous for his whole idea of how the planets orbit around the sun in elliptical fashion. Mm-hmm. You also had Hegel, who's famous for his dialectical method, where there is a thesis, an antithesis, and then there is a synthesis. And so that might be a mouthful for some people. Nevertheless, it's replete with great students of the past, and it was fun just to walk the cobblestone streets and to see the different colorful village buildings and to see the Neckar River. And it was just fantastic as well, just to have that time with my lovely bride. We spent time eating schnitzel and having lots of good food together. And you know, it's astonishing how thin the people are in Germany when you consider the pork, the beer, the breads, the pastries, the fried food. Nevertheless, their food is not processed. It doesn't have all the preservatives, and they walk to a lot of places and they ride their bikes. And you can see the difference that processed food has on the temple that we have known as the human body. And we can also see how important it is for us to walk around. I've never seen pastries so beautiful as they are in their presentation there in Germany.
Well, and that's just kind of a normal thing, man. Someday I want to get to Germany and taste the pastry and check out some of the sites that you got to see. It was sweet.
Yeah, I'd love to take you on a Reformation tour there. I've done a few of those where I've traveled through Prague and Switzerland and the Calvin's land into Germany, obviously, with Martin Luther. And so I just love the history of all that and understanding of it. You know, it's interesting as well to hear some of the people in Germany as I would talk to, thinking, oh, it's such a beautiful land marked by such a dark past with Adolf Hitler, and we think about what went down with the Nazi regime and the different camps like Buchenwald and Dachau, and you think about, you know, how an entire culture was brainwashed. And still to this day, you have a very small remnant of people, even in Germany, who would hail Hitler or even deny the Holocaust, which is just astonishing. I mean, you're thinking the concentration camps. Haven't you seen those? People can, you know, believe a particular narrative. You can remember in Iran with Ahmadinejad, and he as well believed that the Holocaust was just a myth that was made up. And so people today in our own culture would believe that 9/11, you know, wasn't really accomplished in the way that we understand the roots of it. So it's just interesting the way that we come up with different narratives to try to support history.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's turn to our primary topic for today, and that's the question of Halloween. So there's several questions that are going to come up here as regards to Christians and how they should approach Halloween and whatnot. But maybe we should just start with the origin. What are some of the, what's the melting pot of the origin of Halloween?
Well, I think that's an appropriate term, the melting pot, because there is not a monolithic, you know, understanding that we have of Halloween. I know earlier on in my own understanding of it was that it originated originated about 2,000 years ago with the Celts. And they believed that the veil between the spiritual realm and the physical realm was thinned out basically on Halloween. And so you would wear costumes, so to speak, to confuse the spirits, or you might try to placate them by offering them treats. And I thought, well, man, if I was an evil spirit, all you'd have to do is offer me up a Snickers bar and I might not harass you so bad. Nevertheless, our dear friend Mike Winger, I had a chance to listen to his wonderful episode on YouTube as it relates to some pastoral thoughts on Halloween. I thought he did a great job, even opening up my eyes to the fact that there is not just this one size fits all. He got in and he shared some of the different origin stories as it relates to South America and the Aztecs, where they celebrate the Day of the Dead. And they will, even in schools, set up altars on the Day of the Dead, and people will bring snacks and different offerings to their loved ones with the hope of sensing their presence. You have the Catholic Church that has All Hallows Eve and All Saints Day on November 1st, and then All Souls Day on November 2nd. And so really what you see is this amalgamation of different beliefs that kind of all hint at the dead, but it's produced different ways in which people experience. And so today we have different forms as well. I mean, there are the Satanists who obviously can do horrific things on Halloween, where they're offering sacrifices, which would be an abomination. You have people engaged in necromancy, which would be obviously abominable according to scriptures and the Torah. You have the Wiccan movement. So you'll have witches. They'll be practicing their certain celebratory means on a night like Halloween. And so I think what we can do is step back and realize as Christians that it's not as easy to pin down the origin of Halloween. It is truly, as you mentioned, Tim, more of a melting pot.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I mean, even so much so that we can look back at the beginning of the 20th century and how there was, you know, really that push towards, you know, trick-or-treating, going house to house, and there was a lot of, you know, people were committing crimes, teens were committing crimes, they were taking apart wagons and then rebuilding them on tops of roofs and stuff like that. They were, you know, they'd be toilet paper, and it's where we get the idea of trick-or-treat. If you don't give me something, I'm going to, you know, toilet paper your house or whatever.
Yeah, TP your house.
Yeah, and so they started to try to come up with several different community events that they could, you know, kind of corral these kids and get them from being so, you know, rambunctious, if you will.
Yeah, throw them into a fall festival.
Right. Yeah, put them in a fall festival. And so, yeah, so that kind of leads us to what are some of the things that, you know, how should churches as an organization think about some of this stuff when it comes to trick-or-treating or, you know, creating fall festivals or something like that? Should they stay away from it completely? Should they completely embrace it? What would you say about that?
Well, I think we're already hinting at one approach, and that is just to understand there's no one-size-fits-all understanding on the foundation or the genesis of Halloween. And so I think that we have to be careful that we don't commit the genetic fallacy that we refer to in philosophy of religion. And that is to dismiss something outright because of how it started or how it originated or the genesis of it.
Yeah.
And so just because something might have had a dark origin doesn't mean that it is perpetually dark. You know, Mike even used the illustration, which I thought was fantastic, where he referred to baptism and he talked about how the Essenes had their different forms of baptism, and the Jews had their forms of baptism, and the Babylonians had their ritual purity and cleansing rites as it related to baptism. But obviously Jesus Christianized it for us. Yeah. And so we don't not baptized because there were the Babylonians or the Essenes that had a, you know, warped view of it, but rather we Christianize it. And so I think that's one thing that the church can do is they can Christianize it. And so some people have done that. I think one of the options that people have, obviously, is they could open up their church and they could create sort of a fall festival. And, you know, there's nothing wrong in and of itself with a fall festival. But I do think that it's an opportunity for us. I mean, people are are coming to our house. They're knocking on our doors.
Right.
It's a time to turn our strangerhood into a neighborhood. It's a time to be neighborly. And so I listened to one guy say that there's nothing redemptive whatsoever about Halloween. And I understand, you know, we shouldn't celebrate the dead. But if we're remembering maybe the impact of our loved ones that have passed on, that can be redemptive.
Yeah.
If we're neighboring and connecting with people, that can be redemptive. If we're creating a fun experience for our kids, that can be redemptive.
Right.
So I think that that would be a real black and white depiction to say there's nothing redemptive whatsoever as it relates to Halloween.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I mean, some of the things that we've done, you know, I have two small children, a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old, and, you know, we love just walking around the neighborhood and getting a chance to talk to people, talk to neighbors, meet them, say hi to them. It's a chance that we get to, you know, just express, hey, we should get together and whatnot. And someone else in the neighborhood this year is having a fall festival on Halloween in the afternoon before we go trick-or-treating and inviting some of the neighbors over. So it's a great opportunity for us to just hang out and get to know some different folks and whatnot. So would there be anything else that you would advise a Christian that's maybe thinking about this idea of Halloween and how can we redeem it, that they should, you know, maybe take a step in that direction? What are some other, what's other advice that you might give them?
Well, I do think that, you know, the Bible talks about whatever we do, we should do it all to the glory of God in 1 Corinthians 10:13. I do think that we should have compassion toward people who might find, you know, our celebration of it, so to speak, as a stumbling block, in particular, if they came out of like Satanism, you can imagine how a day in which they saw it, you know, celebrated it with such evil by offering sacrifices, maybe of animals or what have you, or performing seances. We need to be sympathetic to those who come out of particular New Age background or Satanism. So with that in mind, I think that that's going to be far and few between people we're going to meet like that. So I think that what we can do is, you know, each determine in our own conscience what we should do. I mean, the Bible doesn't say anything about Halloween. It does say things about necromancy. It does talk about, you know, offering sacrifices to the gods as being abominable.
Right.
But I do think that we could recognize that in the Bible, it doesn't say anything about it. Now that creates an approach for us. Mm. If you take the two reformers that I mentioned at the outset of the program, like John Calvin, you know, born in France, but was living there in Geneva and bringing about a lot of Swiss Reformation. And then you think about Luther, they had two different approaches when it came to the Bible.
Yeah.
For Martin Luther, his approach was if the Bible doesn't say you can't, you can. For John Calvin, if the Bible doesn't say you can, you can't. Well, I would be more Lutheran in my approach there. Right. Now, I definitely could recognize some of the problems with a Martin Luther. I mean, a guy who took the book of James out or who wrote against the Jews in his Tractatus, which was very problematic. In fact, such a Tractatus would be used later by Hitler to sway the Germans to say, look, this reformer that we revere hated the Jews. And so he used the Tractatus that was put out called Against the Jews by Luther to become something that would be used to sway the crowds to get engaged. Ideas have massive consequences. Luther would be shocked had he understood the consequences of that. So I would be more Lutheran. If the Bible doesn't say you can't, you can. Now, obviously, we need to exercise some wisdom with that statement. Now, on Halloween, we know that it is highly commercialized. You know, it is money that is spent like crazy celebrating death. People decorate their yards with skulls and signs of death and blood and all of that. And I do think that there is an evil that as Christians that we need to be warned against, and we should not give any hint of evil. So where does that leave us? I think that we can, you know, be engaged in our neighborhood. There's nothing wrong with connecting and being communal. I think that if we are going to dress up, that we need to be cautious. You know, Mike Winger talked about how when he was younger, he dressed up as Freddy Krueger. I cracked up about that, you know. I do think that if we're going to dress up, you know, as Jason or as Michael from Halloween, you know, Michael Myers isn't the way to go. People will say, oh, but we're just having fun with that. I do think that we have to to have some boundaries when it comes to having fun. So if somebody's dressed up as a cowboy or somebody is dressed up, you know, like a princess, I don't think that that is evil in and of itself.
Yeah.
In fact, it allows the creative mind. The kids love getting dressed up. Yeah. It's so much fun. And I think that as parents, we don't want to strip that opportunity away. But if people choose not to do that, I think that we can respect their opinion. But I also would want to say that those who are adamantly against it, don't assume that somebody's not a Christian. There are people that will say things like, oh, you can't be a Christian and celebrate. Yeah. Well, the Bible says that we need to believe on the Lord Jesus Christ to be saved. It doesn't say believe on the Lord Jesus Christ to be saved and don't celebrate Halloween.
Right, right.
So,
well, yeah, you mentioned how commercialized it is. Well, some of the numbers I was seeing was something like close to $9 billion are spent a year, particularly in America, on Halloween costumes and candy and decorations and whatnot. Not a quarter of the American candy sales happen in the month of October. It's a staggering thing. So,
so
with that in mind, what are some other areas other than the ones that you've covered so far that Christians might need to be cautious about, particularly in our context today, where we've talked about some of the history and the necromancy? What are some of the things that we might just caution people against?
I think pastors should address this kind of a topic. It's our responsibility as shepherds of the flock to equip people to think Christianly, to give them a worldview. So I think that giving them an understanding of some of the origins and some of the various stories there and helping them to understand that way that people primarily think of Halloween. Yes, if you're living in, South America and Mexico, and you are bringing offerings to your dead ancestors with the hope of coming in contact with them, you don't want to celebrate that.
Right.
But if you want your kids to be able to dress up and go to school and they're dressed up as a princess or a cowboy, I don't think that we need to have an aneurysm about that. I think that we get really worked up sometimes, and I'm not promoting dressing up like John the Baptist either. So I think that, we just need to step back and say, look, what can we do? We have a day that is celebrated in our culture every year. It's called Halloween. Mm-hmm. How can we equip our church to understand the different ways that this has been celebrated? How can we think about it as a church? And if you take a stance, then just kind of give those principles. So if it was me, I would stand up and I would say, let me give you a few minutes on some of the different origin stories. Mm-hmm. Let me talk with you about some of the dangers to be aware of. Let me talk with you about some of the redemptive possibilities that we could encounter by partaking and just getting out in our neighborhoods. Let me share with you an approach for how it is that we can go about this in a way that I don't think would offend the conscience of others. And I think also we just don't want to be weird. We're already perceived as weird enough. And I'm not saying that we need to go kind of be like the culture, but there are these moments where we become unnecessarily weird. Mm. It's weird enough for some people that we walk around saying that we believe that Jesus communicates with us, that we have a working relationship with a resurrected Messiah. But if they think that that's weird, so be it. We're willing to give a rational defense for why it is that we believe in the resurrected Messiah.
Yeah.
But I don't think we want to create all these other obstacles to the cross by saying, we're not going to celebrate Halloween. For example, the Bible doesn't talk about birthdays, but we celebrate people's birthdays, right? Jehovah's Witnesses, what do? They will not celebrate people's birthdays.
Right.
And so they take that extreme because the Bible doesn't say anything about that. Well, the Bible doesn't say anything about the fact that Jesus was lesser than Yahweh, yet they make their new world translation to say that with the twisted Greek that they put in place.
Right.
So all that to say, Tim, I think we can have an equipping approach to this. And I think that silence isn't the best approach either. Mm. And a lot of pastors, I think they just stay silent about these topics. And when these calendar dates come up, we have so many natural built-in opportunities to be pastoral, to equip. So when it comes to Black History Month, what a great opportunity to promote social justice and racial reconciliation. Yeah. When it comes to different calendar days, maybe even in the Hebrew calendar, we can celebrate that and we can teach, what Tabernacles was all about. Yeah. You know, we can teach about the Feast of Pentecost. When it comes to Halloween, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, celebrating life, we can talk about why we're pro-life biblically.
Yeah.
So take those days and apologetically equip your church so that they can be worldview oriented in how to approach life.
Yeah, that's good. In our few remaining minutes, I think it would be helpful to maybe talk about the entertainment that comes along with Halloween. You know, there's several movies that come out, horror movies. There's, you know, kids specials that come out, you know, the Peanuts, right? You know, Charlie Brown.
A new Halloween's out this year.
Yeah, new Halloween's out this year. It's like, man, that thing's been going on for a long time, right? So how should we think about, you know, Christians watching some of those movies? Where was the line? What would you use as discernment, kind of some mechanisms that you would look at to say, should I go watch this movie? Should I not watch this movie? How would you approach that?
Yeah, that's a good question for us to ponder. I do think for some people, what bothers one individual may not bother another.
Yeah.
So guys in particular are going to be much more affected by women that are dressed very immodestly or with highly sexual scenes, but maybe watching gore scenes that they don't feel as disturbed by. For me, my approach to film in general is to just kind of watch with a Christian lens and to try to pull away from a movie and think, well, what was the driving message?
Yeah.
Where did that align with my biblical worldview? Where did it contradict it? And I think that in the areas it contradicts it, it can teach me a little bit about where our culture's at.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not personally comfortable watching horror films. I do love thrillers. So some people would say, oh man, I just don't get it. How can you watch The Sixth Sense?
Yeah.
I can discern the difference between just a horror film like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and watching the Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
So there is something about a thrill and suspense, a murder mystery that I personally can enjoy. But my personal boundaries come into play where I don't want to watch something that's just filled with just sexual scenes and just unnecessary horror.
Yeah.
And so that boundary, I mean, for a season, Tim, I went 10 years without watching anything above PG. That was kind of my, I remember I walked out of a movie once because the A word was mentioned. Well, then I was at Dallas Theological Seminary and my professor was teaching us how to watch film. And he was showing clips from The Matrix. And I went and saw that. And I realized, you know what, they use some language in there.
Yep.
So, you know, for me, if I watch a film with language, it doesn't make me want to start cussing.
Right.
I've been there. I've done that. I used to say my favorite, you know, bad word was the F word. I cussed like a sailor. I have no desire to just start cussing because I hear that.
Yeah.
But if I was watching movies that, if I was sitting around watching porn all the time, if I was watching just, you know, seductive films, that would get under my skin.
Yeah.
Watching a horror film doesn't make me want to be a Michael Myers or a Freddy Krueger, but it does just get in my head just seeing that kind of gore. So I think that this is a conscience thing. People come at this differently. There's not a one size fits all. You know, as Christians, we love that, don't we? We just want somebody to tell us how to put, you know, everything in a box.
Yeah, give me the guidelines and that's it. You know,
give me the guidelines. And I'm just not that way. I used to be that way, really black and white. And you know, I've found sometimes too earlier on in a Christian's experience, like for me watching all these horrible movies, cussing like a sailor, I needed a good hard boundary for a series of years.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes we need a certain set of boundaries and then we mature. And then we can adjust those boundaries as we go on. But we need to be careful that we don't say that, okay, now I've matured and I can adjust the boundaries and now I can start watching porn and horror. I think that we need to be careful with that. Now, you know, the late R.C. Sproul, he loved horror films.
Yeah.
I always thought, my goodness, how does a guy like R.C. Sproul like horror films? He loved them. And I sit there and I go, you know, God used him in amazing ways. And while he might have been demented in a few ways there, I don't know what was going on with our buddy R.C. At the same token, our conscience is different and God used him greatly.
Yeah, no, I think on specifically on the horror film thing, my insight would be that there is a cheese factor to some of those. And where the cheese factor is high, I'm like, okay, it's more funny than anything else. Where it's trying to be more reality, then that's where I would say, maybe this isn't, you know, so great. But, you know, watching some of the specials with our kids, it gives us a chance to talk about the difference between soul and living and dead and all those different pieces. So
great
insight on all of those different topics. And we hope you, the audience, enjoyed this as well. If you're listening to us on the radio and you want to listen to this again, you can find it at youtube.com/oneminuteapologist. And with that, we'll meet you next time as on the Unapologetic Show.
Let's face it, evangelism can be a scary endeavor, especially in this culture. Do you ever feel handcuffed when it comes to sharing the gospel? Well, if so, let me introduce you to a crash course on evangelism that I have created for you in order to eliminate the fears so that you could do evangelism in a conversational way, in a way that's relatable, in a way that can resonate with 21st century America. In this 7-part course, you will also have the opportunity to be invited in to a Facebook group whereby you can meet other people who have some of the same obstacles to overcome that you might have, and you can connect with them and find a network there. I hope you'll join us in this 7-week journey to doing outreach, the Great Commission for Jesus Christ.
Enroll today at oneminuteapologist.com/courses. You've been listening to Unapologetic with Dr. Bobby Conway, the 1-Minute Apologist. I am your host, Tim Hall. Be sure to listen to Bobby on Pastor's Perspective Monday through Thursday, as well as like, share, and subscribe to the 1-Minute Apologist YouTube channel, where we have over 1,000 videos. We would also like to remind you that this is a listener-supported program. We would greatly appreciate your support in any amount so we could continue to provide this ministry. If you would like to be a part of our team in any capacity, please visit our website at oneminuteapologist.com. And while you're there, check out all of Bobby's books, courses, and even invite him to speak at your church or event. Thank you for listening to Unapologetic, where we defend truth without compromise. This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.